Welcome to Be Customer Led, where we'll explore how leading experts in customer and employee experience are navigating organizations through their own journey to be customer led and the actions and behaviors employees and businesses exhibit to get there. And now, your host, Bill Stakos.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Be Customer Led. I've got, well, just an amazing person with us today. Dennis Gielen is founder of a consulting company called Zero In and just published a book called The Zero In Formula, which is pretty cool. And I had a chance to read it before the show. There's some chapters in there that really resonated for me, and I want to get into some of those here with Dennis. But Dennis, before we get into the stuff, into the questions, welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. What a pleasure.
Yeah, I'm excited to get into some of the stuff. So tell us, you've got a pretty interesting journey when we connected, you know, before this, obviously. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what kind of drove you and just your journey to get to where you are today.
Yeah, well, I hope it's interesting. I mean, when I hear other people's, they always sound so interesting, and then I wonder about my own. But I'll go over it. Originally, I would say going back, you know, 25 years, I wanted to be a teacher originally. That was my original passion. I just knew I loved to teach. I loved to explain. I loved to. But that didn't work out. I got my Bachelor of Science in computer software engineering, and I dove right in and became a software developer out of school and loved it. I loved that problem solving, getting my hands in, and had some great early success with that. So was promoted into different leadership and management roles. Ended up getting my master's in project management, and then really started to get more into that whole strategic, what larger problems can I dig into and solve instead of just within a computer software program? It's the business unit and then the business. And I was lucky. I got to work in some different industries in different roles. But eventually I started to get the bug. Is there more to this than that? Early in your life, I think most of us
the big existential questions.
Yeah, well, but there's this script we're supposed to follow, right? Yeah. We're all told go to school, get a job, work 9 to 5, put, you know, 10-15% away for retirement, and then by the time you're 60, 65, if you're lucky, you can now enjoy yourself, right? So I subscribe to that, of course, but eventually it was like, boy, do I have to follow that script? Does that have to be the way everybody lives? Is that the only way? And I got the bug and said, hey, if I'm enjoying helping one company at a time really get some better strategic direction and solve some bigger problems, what would it be like if I helped multiple? What if I just did that on my own? And that's where I kind of leaped off a couple of years ago and started Zero In from scratch, which was a whole other learning experience. But
we could do a whole show on that even. And you know, it's funny. I talk to a lot of CX leaders, all the time. There are so many people who want to go do their own thing. And, you know, sometimes I'm just like, you are just really ill-prepared to go do something on your own, right? And other times I'm like, yeah, go for it. Yeah. That is a whole – I commend you for doing that because that, one, takes a lot of courage and guts. But two, it just takes, like, perseverance, right? I mean, it's very different working in a corporate setting. Let's talk about the book for a little bit. So, within the book, you talk a lot about customer centric innovation or CCI. So what was the genesis for the book? Like, why did you write it? And like, why customer centric innovation?
Yeah, I guess that was the first question I really had to answer when I decided to start my own company. Well, what is it that I'm doing? It's one thing just to say, hey, you're a consulting company. Well, specifically how? What problem am I solving? That was probably the first eye-opener for me was, boy, I need to understand that. Who am I helping? What am I solving? And why is that different or better than anybody else? And really what I landed on when I looked back through my, you know, previous 25 years of experience at different companies I've worked for and worked with and partnered with and so on, I started to realize, geez, the companies over time that really rise to the top, that really are successful long-term, they've got two things in common. They are extremely customer-centric and they are extremely innovative, right? What does that really look like? And from my experience, how have I helped do those things in the past? And that's where I really started to put together some tools, some strategies, and eventually a formula that I work with different businesses to help them be more CCI or customer-centric and innovative. But to answer your question, why a book? I would say by the time I was finally starting to get some things figured out and Zero In was starting to roll along and I had a nice pipeline of clients, well, this thing came along called COVID-19,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
So that was a gut punch. All of my consulting was either put on hold to say, hey, we got to reexamine this.
Yeah.
We don't know what's going on with this pandemic, Dennis. Can you give us a few months? Or it was completely canceled. Right? Businesses were going under. They had to really look at. So it was like, boy, what do I do? So up until that time, most of what I was doing was workshops. I was working, I did some consulting engagements, but mostly with local businesses, small to medium size in my geographic area. And I thought to myself again, geez, could there be more than that?
Yeah.
I want to help as many businesses anywhere be as customer-centric and innovative as possible. So that's where the idea of the book came along. There was some prompting from a guy named Charles Green. He was the founder of Trusted Advisor Associates, and he co-authored a book called The Trusted Advisor probably 20 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that book, actually.
Yeah, so him and I connected, and he really encouraged me. Yeah, no, you need to do this. You have something here. You've got something that's going to resonate. Mm-hmm. It's perfect for a book format, and it's just going to jumpstart Zero In. It's going to take it to a whole other level. So that was kind of how the book came about. It was, I got all this time on my hands with COVID. And how do I use this to my advantage to really take Zero In to the next level?
Yeah. And look, and the economy will come back. Things will, you know, businesses will be back. And yeah, you can use that as a platform. I love that. You know, in the book, the formula is almost like a matrix, right?
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about how you came up with that and that as a framework, you know, and how do you hope readers are going to use it?
Well, basically the formula is a combination of two core business beliefs that I have. And the one we already touched on, you need to be as customer-centric and innovative as possible if you really want to survive long-term. Now, those are buzzwords. And I go into the book, but what does it really mean to be customer-centric? What does it really mean to be innovative? But I take that concept along with, I also believe that there are three main pillars that every business needs to be founded on in priority order. And that is, your purpose and direction is always number one. It has to be clear. It has to be customer-centric and innovative. And you never stray from it. This is what we're here for. And then below that, you've got your next layer. This is your team collaboration layer. What tools, what strategies are we putting in place so that the people we have can collaborate together to achieve that purpose and direction? And then third is the people themselves, the individual contributors. What skills, what behaviors do you need from those people so that they can collaborate effectively to live out that purpose in a customer-centric, innovative company? So you put those together, and that's really the formula.
Yeah, and I love how you've laid out the chapters that way a lot, too.
Yeah.
All right, I know you've probably been answering those two questions since you've launched the book, so I'm gonna move away from the more plain vanilla kind of questions, and we'll get a little bit deeper if that's okay. My favorite chapter in the book is called "But This Is the Way We've Always Done It," right?
Yeah.
So 10 words there, and for me, in whatever shape or form you've heard that, they're the most expensive words in business, flat out.
Yeah, I think, and I call it the phrase that kills in the book.
The phrase, that's right, exactly right, and it does. I mean, it is literally a business killer. You talk about in that chapter three main reasons why many businesses are not innovative,
yeah,
right? If you're working in one of those companies, how do you identify if you're one of them?
Yeah, I think if I recall correctly, in that chapter, I labeled them the dinosaurs, the busy bees, and the lost, right? So first of all, it's do you believe that being innovative needs to be a huge priority in your business? If you don't, you fall into this dinosaur category, right? I believe if you're not focused on trying to find new and better ways of adding value through innovative principles and practices, those are the companies where you hear those phrases. No, this is the way we do it around here. Mm-hmm. Or if it's not broken, don't fix it. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's just too old school thinking. Now, there's a lot of smart business leaders running those companies. They know business. They know their products. They know their services. But I think they just have the focus in the wrong place, which is let's find that perfect recipe. Mm-hmm. Let's find this repeatable process that we can just get good at and do over and over and over again, and we will be successful. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a false sense of security, because if you don't have innovative principles and practices and an innovative culture in place, you're setting yourself up for disruption. And you're creating this culture of where we don't want to do it differently. This is the way we do it, right?
Right, and that just, you know, that rote work, almost repeatable process. And and unfortunately, that impacts your employees over the long term, right? Yeah. They're not engaged. They're just kind of hitting a stamp, you know, through a process line, right?
Yep. Or they're lulled into this comfort zone of thinking, this is how we do it. This is my job. This is what I do 9 to 5.
And then you have a pandemic or a competitor come up right behind you, and you know, those businesses are gone, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. So that's the dinosaurs. Next one was the busy bees.
Yeah.
I think these are the companies that understand innovation's important. We need to be, but man, we're just so busy. We don't have the time. And these are the companies that are set themselves up where maybe the leadership is too involved in the operations, and they just have this tunnel vision of day to day, this is what we got to get done. Mm-hmm. And boy, sure, it'd be nice if we had time to innovate. But I think if they rearrange their priorities and if they really step back and the leadership spent more time looking at the bigger picture, innovation would be a priority and it'd be at the forefront and they would make time for it. So I call those the busy bees because they just use that as an excuse, I think.
Yeah.
Right? Have you ever seen that video actually on YouTube of the moonwalking bear?
No.
So there's this video. Look it up after this. The moonwalking bear. And it's basically, it tells you, okay, there's a bunch of basketball players standing on a court and they're passing the ball around.
Yeah.
And the video says, count how many times the people in white shirts pass the ball. And you're focusing on that. And you're looking, and you're right in the middle of the screen. A bear walks in and moonwalks right across it. But you're so focused on counting the number of passes, you don't even notice that bear the first time you're watching the video. And I think that's what happens with you know, there's ideas, there's opportunities, there's that's innovation right in front of our face, but we're so caught up in the day-to-day operations. It's sorry, I don't have time for that. And that's the busy bees. And then the lost, I think those are the companies that they understand, yes, we need to be innovative. They make it a priority. They put time aside, but they don't know how to do it. There's principles and there's practices to innovating effectively, and they want to. They're just lost. How do we do this effectively? And I think a lot of us can relate with that. I know for me, 20-some years ago, you know, I'm pretty green. I'm sitting at my cubicle, and my boss pulls me into a meeting and says, okay, guys, we need to brainstorm. Everybody give me your best ideas. And I was, you know, froze. I don't have anything, right? And I'm looking around the room and nobody else is coming up. And I'm thinking, okay, it's not just me. But that was my first experience to brainstorming. And I thought, oh boy, I suck at it because my boss was just expecting. And really, it was just, that's not how you do it.
That's right.
Right? There's principles and practices to effective brainstorming. And it's not just get in a room and say, give me an idea, right? So when you really start to look into, well, what does effective innovation look like? What are principles and practices that the most innovative companies use? And you start to put those in place, you understand that innovation is more than just let's get in a room and brainstorm.
In your experience, you know, and maybe even research for the book, what's the biggest percentage of those three? Like, where do most companies kind of fall in? Are they tiered in any way, or how does that work out?
I would say 10 years ago, a lot of dinosaurs. But so much has happened over the last maybe 10, 20 years with the internet, with smartphones, with, you know, all these new disruptive businesses coming out. I think most people are starting to understand, yes, you have to be innovative. So now it has shifted from, we see a lot less dinosaurs and people not even understanding or thinking that innovation's a priority, and a lot more lost now. We get it. We have to do this. But man, where do we start? And I think that's where the majority of businesses find themselves when they don't know how to be innovative.
I can see that certainly in a small or mid-sized enterprise, even large enterprises, frankly, big corporates. Just kind of seeing like, okay, we know we need to move. Change is hitting our industry, but how exactly do we go about it? What are the questions we even have to ask ourselves to figure that out, right? You know, I want to, so if we kind of sequence in the book, I love this, but you know, you say, you talk about the principles of innovation, since it will kind of pull on that thread a little bit.
Yep.
The first one is understand your customers, which I buy into wholeheartedly, given the work that I do every day, right? But the next one was question your assumptions and biases. I think there was the next one. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you start with question your assumptions and biases before understanding your customers? Is it, can you even question them without understanding your customers? Or do you need to just first at least be able to admit, I may be wrong, we may be overthinking this, our heads down, or you know, we don't have the skill set. Now let's go out and understand your customers. I was just curious why you started off, like how you sequenced that.
Well, they're both important, but I think for me, innovation too easily gets described as a newer, better way of doing something.
Yeah.
Which I think is true, but it's only part of the equation. It's, for me, innovation is a new and better way of doing something that adds more value. You can have a newer, better way of doing something, but if it's not adding any value to anybody, to me, that's just innovation for the sake of innovation. You found something new or cool or different. Great. So in order for something to add value, you first have to know who you're adding value for.
Sure.
So spend time understanding who your customers are. Why do they buy certain products and services? What challenges do they have today? Maybe they don't even articulate them very well, but understand what are their barriers? What are those challenges? What are those frustrations? And where are their opportunities to add more value? Make that your starting point so that you're at least, if you're going to innovate, if you're going to find creative new ways of doing things for them, it's starting with, here's a particular spot where we can find an area to add more value for our customers. Make that your jumping off point. And then, okay, what are our assumptions and biases around those challenges right now?
Yeah.
A lot of times.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was just going to say, a lot of times you hear companies say, well, we've tried this before and it didn't work. Ah, perfect. Let's dig into that. What exactly did we try? Why didn't it work? Did we have a certain assumption or bias that it was kind of holding us down? Could we tweak it? Yeah. Could we try something different? Too many times ideas get thrown out because it's, oh, we tried that before, or that will never work. That's a key phrase to now dig into and say, okay, that's an assumption we have. Why is that?
Almost like because we've always done it that way on some level.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
Like in the line of work, that if I hear those two, I'm just like, oh boy, okay, well then we clearly didn't do something right. That's why it didn't work.
Yeah.
Right? Because it sounds like a good idea.
Yeah.
So, on the show, we talk a lot about the employee experience as well as the customer experience, how to tie the two. And I love that within the framework and the formula, you bring in individual skills and behaviors that are required actually to be successful. Do you mind if I mention these on the show?
Yeah,
perfect. So there's four: engaging, empathetic, humble, and passionate.
Right.
Right. No one's going to argue that these are critically important skills to have, right? What has been your experience with the hard skills maybe on the other side of that that are important, whether that's data or tech forward, right? Like, how do these also come into the equation? Or are you saying, hey, look, these are like table stakes, you have to have them, but without these core four soft skills from people, doesn't matter how data-centric you are, tech forward you are, you'll probably end up failing because you don't have the right soft skills in place with your people.
Yeah, definitely the hard skills are table stakes. You need to have these hard skills in order to do this role. Now, a company can say either we need somebody to come in the door that already has this, or we have the ability to train this. What you don't have the ability to train most of the time are those soft skills. If you have two candidates in front of you that are fairly equal in their hard skills, well, give me the one that's engaging and empathetic and humble and passionate. That's the one that is going to fit into my team. Now, I relate this back to the formula in the book, probably a little better than I will here, but it's that team collaboration layer, right? You want the individuals that are going to be able to collaborate effectively together to work towards that customer-centric and innovative purpose that you have in your company. So I believe in order for people to collaborate well together, you want people that are engaging and empathetic and humble and passionate. So look for those people so that you can plug them into that team collaboration layer and you're really working effectively together. And I think too many times businesses make the mistake of just looking for that great individual contributor. Looks great on paper, has all the hard skills we want, and then they get in the door and they're like, man, this person is actually causing a problem. Brilliant, hardworking, smart, just can't work with anybody. Right?
Yeah, that happens probably more often than companies want to admit, frankly.
Yeah.
Because, well, they've invested the time, right, to bring someone like that on to begin with. I'm going to throw you for a little loop. I just saw on LinkedIn just before the show, you wrote about indifference.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of hit me in the gut, that word. And how you need, if you're starting a business, right, obviously you don't want to just say, my goal is to start one. Who does that? But like, I want to create a long-term viable organization and business, right?
Yes.
To meet whatever goals or objectives I have in my life. You talk about the word indifference and ensuring not only do your customers kind of indifference doesn't kind of creep into them, but also employees.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that piece, because that's not a word that people talk about a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
But is incredibly powerful and will shut you down quicker than, you know, because we've always done it that way almost, yep. Right? So
yep.
Where was your kind of inspiration for that? And you know, why did you want to bring that to the fore?
Yeah, and to be honest, it took me a while to come to that realization as well. A lot of people would ask me, well, why customer-centric and innovative?
Yeah.
Why is that so important? And every time I tried to articulate it, it never came out properly. Why is customer-centric and innovative so important? So I spent a lot of time trying to really dive into that, because I knew in my heart this is why it's important, but I couldn't put it to words until I realized the biggest challenge that every business is trying to solve, whether you're a startup or you've been in business for 20 years, is indifference. You have indifferent customers when there's no compelling reason for them to buy your product or service rather than your competitors. If you're just competing on price, I resonate with this company. It's no, I bought there because it was cheaper, right? So how are you truly investing and understanding those customers, why they do what they do, why they buy certain products or services, so that you make sure that your products and services or experiences are resonating with those people? And the only way to do that is to truly be customer-centric and have roles and responsibilities and goals and KPIs and strategies and tools around understanding your customers, right? But then on the flip side, there's been all kinds of businesses where, you know, they bring in somebody, it's a great candidate, and they watch them walk out the door 2 years later because I wasn't passionate about working here. Well, the business, I believe, has to create that. There has to be a compelling purpose and direction for the business. There needs to be, you know, innovation going on where people feel like they're part of something new and better and adding more value. So you create this culture of being customer-centric and innovative. Mm-hmm. Now you've got people that are passionate about getting up and coming to work each day because of where they work and what they get to contribute to. So by creating a customer-centric and innovative company at the core, and that's what I kind of go through in the book, you are now turning indifferent customers into fans. You're turning indifferent employees into passionate team members. And that's what we want. That's what it takes to be a long-term successful business.
I love that. I love that you just distilled your book into like one word, by the way.
Yeah.
By the way, solving not many authors, not many people are able to do that. It's pretty impressive. So you're a pretty inspirational guy. I really do love the book. I don't do recommendations on this show, but like I do recommend the book. I really, it was a good, easy, quick read, and I love the framework just because it's so simple and very relatable and applicable in a lot of different scenarios. Where do you get your inspiration from, Dennis?
Yeah, I'm a big learner. I love reading. I love podcasts. And, you know, there's the obvious stuff. I want to read about innovation. I want to read about CX. So I love a good Clayton Christensen book about innovation. I like Matt Watkinson or Shep Hyken books about customers. But I also like to go outside that. You know, how else can I learn and get inspiration? So, you know, authors like Malcolm Gladwell, he doesn't talk about innovation or CX, but he talks about trends and he talks about business and he talks about just understanding the world, or somebody like Adam Grant, who takes different. So I love that. But then you got to break it up every once in a while with a good crime novel, right? A John Grisham or a Harlan Coben or something. And it's funny, I find even getting inspiration by some of the ways that they write or some of the ideas that they put into their books, right?
Yeah, you got to, it can't be all business all the time.
Yeah,
I'm with you though. I'm a huge reader and consumer of just data and content generally.
Yeah.
And I get a ton of inspiration from there. All right. So you've written this book. Obviously it's on Amazon, and I believe it went to number one, right? In the category?
Two different categories. Yeah. It went to number
That's
one.
Awesome.
So I was pretty humbled about that.
Where else can people find you if they want to get in touch? What's the best way to do that?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. That's probably my favorite social media site, just because people are there for business, right? So look me up on LinkedIn. I'd love to connect with people. Or the Zero In website. It's zero-in.ca. So.
Cool. That's right. Just for if listeners couldn't tell, Dennis is from Canada and lives out there. It's a cool accent. Dennis, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Yes, thank you, Bill. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and hope to have you on again soon. And hey, do you have any? Do you have like a new book coming out soon? Like anything else that we should expect from you in the near future? By the way,
I've had a few different people pitch ideas to me, so something will be in the works soon.
We got to look out for that, and hopefully I can have you back on. We can talk about it. All right, everybody. Great show this week. Author, business owner, Dennis Gielen. Definitely got to go check out the book. We'll see you next week, everybody.
We're out. Talk to you soon,
Thanks
everyone.
Thanks for listening to Be Customer Led with Bill Stakos. We are grateful to our audience for the gift of their time. Be sure to visit us at becustomerled.com for more episodes. Leave us feedback on how we're doing or tell us what you want to hear more about. Until next time, we're out.